Everything you put your heart and soul into, it's gone, really. But we'll rebuild. I guess people do, don't they?
People, tractors.
When Jake and Ange from Dogleg Farm lost their home to the Black Range fire, the Braidwood community rallied to support them.
Every time we see people, they hug us. You know?
People fixing fences, people fixing doors.
Yeah. So moving, really. You know, I didn't really expect any of this sort of stuff.
We've got the floods. Just had a massive storm come through. The workshop's totally flooded, the whole ground floor.
The world needs to do so much so fast. It is frightening if you look at it carefully. For example, in the last 35 years, maximum temperatures in Braidwood have increased by nearly 3 degrees.
Whoa. Yeah, and you can see that in those bomb records because it's just so stark when you see the Australian continent changing from sort of green with a bit of yellow in the centre to red, 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 red.
So, I mean, we're already seeing a decrease in tree health. We're seeing tree dieback.
It's very obvious and very concerning.
Change is coming. And if we don't, as a community, build some resilience against these events, then we're in big trouble.
Now, they bring people together at an event titled Braidwood 2040 to discuss visions for the future.
Because it's in the spirit of hope, it's in the spirit of collectively coming together and dreaming up a beautiful pathway to the future.
Just, you know, combining energies and working together can bring about so much change.
You go.
I'm Angela. We're here at Dogleg Farm, sitting in our makeshift house, a shouse.
Oh, and I'm Jake. Angela's partner in crime. Can we do this again? Okay, we're Jake and Ange. We live on Dogleg Farm.
Well, I was born in the northeast of England in Newcastle upon Tyne. We lived down by the docks. I remember as a child, when I was about 7, we went on an excursion to this little village and they took us through a forest. I'd never seen trees. You know, I grew up around concrete and suddenly there were all these trees and mushrooms and little fairy rings. I fell in love with it.
I was always interested in nature as well. You know, I lived on the outskirts of London, but we always used to gravitate towards woodlands and climb trees and stuff like that. So I always had a fascination with, you know, one day owning land, but I thought I'd have to be Paul McCartney or someone to do that because you can't really do that in England unless you're really rich, you know. And then met Ange on the internet quite by accident one day, and I was in England, she was in Australia.
Well, I fell in love with Jake, I think primarily because of his humour. He just made me laugh from the outset, you know. We were just typing to each other and I would just be rolling on the floor. He would say things like, you know, scuffs off to the kitchen with head hanging down. And and so his personality just came through immediately. And I just fell in love with the fact that he was just so funny and so open.
And I fell in love with the fact that you were so receptive to that. Not that it was all about me, but... You had the same sort of humour and, I mean, you made me laugh as much as I made you laugh, so I think you're hysterical, you cracked me up.
I think it was kind
humour
of...
Humour at first.
Yeah, humour at first and then music, because we got talking about music and realised we both played.
She had the most calming voice. You know, she'd leave a message on the answer phone and I'd come home from work and hear her say, "Hi, baby, it's me," you know. And play it again, you know, listen to it. She's sending me all these letters and stuff and I'll send him back. This is my hand shape and drawing around the hand and that's my, you know, and this picture of me. And
we just got talking about what we'd like to do and I said, I'd love to have a farm one day. Yeah, me too. And that was it.
Yeah. Everything else just falls into place after that, really, I think, once you feel like you've met a soulmate, you know.
Yeah.
Even all through connect the badness and everything that can go wrong in a relationship, the core is always still there and it's never enough to break what we got, you know.
Yeah, we just knew each other.
Yeah, we got together and lived in Canberra, but we had that shared dream and that was the point, you know.
And from the day that we met, actually, we just talked about it and talked about it and talked about it for years.
Andrew wrote a beautiful song about it, actually, didn't you? Runaway. It felt like a sort of manifestation in a way.
We were looking at properties sort of around the Canberra region and looked at one outside of Braidwood. The bank wouldn't lend us the money. So we talked to the estate agent. She said, "What about buying a house in town here in Braidwood?" And I said, no, we can't go back to the suburbs. She said, no, this is Braidwood. Have a look around. So the more we looked at this place, the more we fell in love with it. We found a house in town, eventually renovated it, sold it, paid off the mortgage and had enough left to buy the block of land.
Yeah, look around. I think this was the second place we looked at. And we walked in and just, oh, my God, you came up on the hill. There's nothing here apart from gun cartridges and beer cans from the
and
last guy in Kunzia, and we walked up on the hill there and looked across the view of the Panarang Black Range. When I came here, I just felt like I'd just come home.
Hi, folks. It's Andrew from Dogleg Farm here.
When we initially got there, it was very wild. It was just wild quinsia that you couldn't even walk through. Most of it was sort of shoulder height.
So this whole area here we've cleared.
We knew that if we wanted to have any chance of growing anything, that we'd have to do something to the soil first.
We've been talking to a lot of people recently about soil creation and mulching.
So we just basically started to set aside little areas and started dumping compost.
So we've been importing lots of green waste from our lovely friends in town.
Planting little bits and pieces and turning it back into the soil and just building it up and building it up.
Right. Got the chicken run here on Dogleg Farm. Such a beautiful day.
When I was a tree surgeon, used to do a lot of work on properties. I always used to save little acorns and things, little seedlings that are coming up in the middle of a path. So I'd dig them up and put them somewhere else. I was always trying to be, you know, sustaining things that didn't have an opportunity and I could actually change the path of that.
People are always contacting us saying, I've got all these maple trees coming up in my garden, I don't want them. Okay, so we just go and get them all and plant them somewhere else. And
if you remember rightly, most of our soil looked like this, which is pretty degraded and dry and you can't do anything with it at all. We then added stuff like this and then we covered it with mulch. Now the soil looks like this. You can see how dark it is. You can see the different layers. Look at that. It's really black. And it's looking really beautiful and things are actually starting to grow in it.
We started planting and planting and planting as much as we could.
Here we have anniversary tree planting.
We ended up building this little hand-built cottage. It was all handmade and it was full of artworks that friends had gifted us or things that we'd salvaged. And that became our home.
It's finished! We have a shed. A piano.
That truly is an off-grid instrument. Within the 4 years, I had a cottage garden, I had herbs growing, we had fruit trees that were just starting to produce.
In fact, we found this little gem here just a second ago. Tiny little grape hyacinth. Up out of the seeds, probably from somebody's garden where we took some garden waste.
So many birds.
These guys in here enjoying the cockadoodlings.
Birds, insects, lizards, so many creatures that were just starting to come in because it was suddenly fertile and was producing.
Some nectar and branches growing. We've got all sorts of things happening.
Beautiful.
Giving it life, you know. And I think that's kind of been the undercurrent for a lot of what we do.
Just taking a little bushwalk on the farm here. And just amazes me, these things, these survivors of a harsh landscape, really.
When were the fires? 2019. So I think that year, because we'd had a really, really hard year because of the drought, you know, and things were just starting to feel really tough. We were using buckets and
taking buckets out of the dam as well.
Buckets out of the dam just to try and keep the trees alive, try and keep the vegetables alive. It was getting hotter and hotter and hotter and we were losing lots of plants and losing a few trees. And I remember Jake saying, this is a, you know, tinderbox waiting to go off.
Harshest conditions and survive through it.
Driving across Bombay River, going backwards and forwards to town, seeing the river just dropping and dropping and dropping to the point where it was just pebbles with a few puddles in it. There was just nothing. And it was heartbreaking. You know, it's quite terrifying because what do we do if a fire comes? We've got nothing to fight it with. Yeah. We've barely got enough for the trees to drink.
It was a bit of a worry.
Because we'd been in the Canberra fires, we lived at Pine Island in Bonython, and so the fires were, literally came up to our back fence. We were trapped in a cul-de-sac and couldn't get out, so we had to stay and fight the fires. We had no choice. But I saw how quickly it moved from the top of the mountain to dropping an ember, and suddenly everything was on fire. So as soon as that fire hit on the Tuesday, and I was watching the fires near Meap, and I thought, this is only 20 kilometres away. This could be on our doorstep any second.
And I said to Angel, honestly, if a fire comes through here, it's not going to need much coaxing to get going, you know.
And so we kind of panicked a bit because of the Canberra experience and raced into town and kept watching the fires near me, and then it was 10 kilometres and it was 20 again. I was like, oh, maybe it's not going to come.
But what can we do? Can't stay the whole time in town.
And then Wednesday, it was a little bit closer and we could see the smoke and I was like, I think we should evacuate, so we'd go back again. And Thursday night, we were lying in bed and I just said, I don't feel comfortable. We packed up at about 11 o'clock at night and went to Steph's in town, my daughter. Came back on the Friday, and then we knew it was getting closer because we could see it coming across the range at the top, and we could see flames and a glow and the smoke. And so we thought, okay, this is getting serious now. So yeah, we came back Friday, packed up a few bits and pieces.
I spent quite a lot of the time wetting areas and raking up things that might be flammable and moving things.
We zipped tin over the doors and the windows.
And then we suddenly had to pack up the truck and go. And I felt really torn, you know, like, why am I going? So the kind of practical me wanted to stay. And then I heard that one of our neighbours was staying, and his family had gone, and he was there on his own looking after his wife and kids' house. And I just felt really bad for him. So I said to Angela, I can't just leave him there, you know.
It's like, no, I don't think you should go.
Can't go, you know, it's look at the fire, and it's on the map, and they're saying they're evacuating, and you can't go back, you know. And I said, I've got to go, you know. And I left.
Well, by the time he was coming back at 3 o'clock, the fireys were coming the other way, and they were blocking roads, and it was really starting to come out.
I was driving towards this huge, great big front, yeah, thinking, what the hell am I doing? Driving towards it, and all the other cars are going the other way, and they were looking at me, like, no, haven't you heard? There's a fire. Yeah, I can see. And I got there and talked to the neighbour, and I said, you all right? And he's up on the roof, and he's got his radio.
Fire. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. There's the smoke.
Yeah.
Just spotted.
And he's got his truck with pumps and, you know, all the gear. You know.
Just spotted again. Wow. On that hillside.
So I stayed and helped for a bit and watched this thing come in. All the embers were dropping around, and you could see smouldering bits in the undergrowth.
We get through this.
Checked on both the neighbours, and they, we'll be fine. We've got a plan.
And the whole time I was just ringing and going, could you please come home? Please come back. Please come back.
So anyway, I got in the car and left. So off I went, feeling really like I was, you know, jumping off the ship before it sinks.
And we literally sat there from 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Watching the fire map.
Watching the fire map, listening to the scanners, watching TV. And then I think about 1 o'clock in the morning, Chris next door rang us and she said, the fire's gone through your place. We can't see. It's dark. You know, we can't see anything. And so we literally just had to lie in bed and wait till sort of first light. We just couldn't do anything, but we just lay there and just waited and waited and waited. And as soon as it was light, we came up. And I remember coming around the corner and seeing the shed and going, oh, God, the shed survived. It'll be fine. And then we drove up and went, oh, no, just saw this crumpled mess.
Just doing a clip. It's really hard to sort of put into words how you feel about stuff. I'm sort of... so numb, I can't even feel. This is our home. Ah, you know, it just makes me question everything, really. All this work, you know, everything you put your heart and soul into, it's gone, you know.
And then suddenly there was fire engines and it was just chaos, just and you're just in shock. BBC News turned up and there's helicopters flying over and you're just sort of in this zone of...
It's like a...
People are ringing us and,
This is the most apocalyptic conditions I've ever known in my life.
Spot fires breaking out and it was just mayhem.
I think the world's ending, guys.
Really? As the wind's turned around, there's shit blowing everywhere. On the hill there.
Within minutes, Simon Kay was driving up the driveway. Yeah. What do you need? You know, helping us put out fires like it. And suddenly people were turning up.
He went and got a fire crew.
Yeah, he went and got a fire crew. Got to town, people were feeding us, people were hugging us, people were giving us clothes. And you know, suddenly everybody just came out of the woodwork and was just carrying us for months, you know.
Yeah.
This is the scene at our place this morning. Look at all this. People, tractors, post hole diggers.
We didn't ask for any help or expect it, but everybody just took it on board and, I don't know, I'm overwhelmed.
Yep.
So moving, really, you know, I didn't really expect any of this sort of stuff.
And our beautiful friends set up a GoFundMe campaign for us, which we equally didn't expect. So thank you to everybody for all the amazing support.
So instead of us doing this all of ourselves, we were actually able to use that money to pay people in town who hadn't worked for months because of all the fires, so we could hire some locals.
People fixing fences, People fixing doors.
This is going to be a door here, back into the downstairs bit.
Putting in posts, incredible.
Every time we see people, they hug us.
It wasn't just the Braidwood community. Suddenly we were getting parcels every day of people sending soaps and little handwritten letters from kids, you know, with little packages. And it was just, every time I opened a letter, I'd just cry again, you know.
And garlic and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, garlic so seed and too. Flower seeds. Yeah. And, yeah, people were making us things. Mm.
We've got people from France. We've got people from Sydney, we've got people from Melbourne.
Suddenly people were turning up in vans with violins and guitars and banjos. And just amazing.
Mm.
Amazing.
So yeah. It was a real time of receiving, you know.
Yeah.
As much as we'd lost it, it was, you know.
A time of abundance, really, suddenly.
It's quite amazing. Really.
We're well chuffed. Sky's the limit.
There we go. On to the next chapter. Good morning. Our first morning back at Dogleg Farm.
We moved into the shed on the 19th of January. I thought, this is going to be awesome. I can just finally plump pillows and hang pictures and make it feel like a home.
It's nice to be home.
Show them the babies.
Babies. Let's go see the babies. So we still have five. They're growing quite well.
And that afternoon, this incredible storm came over from Canberra. It was the most torrential thing I've ever seen in my life. And because everything was burnt, there was no ground cover, there were no trees, there was nothing except dust. And so there was nothing to stop the water flow. And within a couple of minutes, the whole hillside was just coming down as a giant mudslide. And the few trees that had survived were just being pulled over and knocked down and rolling down the hills. I was there on my own. And I can remember coming inside that night. I drank half a bottle of gin and I sat on my knees and just weeping and weeping and weeping.
Not sure if you can see this properly, and I hope you can hear me over the wind, but I was joking with someone the other day that, you know, we'd had the fires, we'd had the floods, and all we needed was the hurricanes. Well, now we have huge gusty winds and they're all blowing dust there. You can't see the hills at all.
The little drainage ponds that we had were now suddenly a raging river with whole trees rolling down this river.
The workshop's totally flooded, the whole ground floor, heaps of boxes of stuff that were sitting on the floor are ruined, heaps of timbers. It's the new norm, as they say, isn't it? Just lurching from one disaster to the next.
I think when people are invested in your journey, then they're giving you things and helping you and supporting you. It's like you become the symbol of hope for them, and that's helping them with their grief and the way that they process it and the way that they coped with it. So I just felt like we had to give back to those people.
Hey, check.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello, Ange.
Hi.
Hello, Claire.
Hello.
I know who Claire is because I saw this person walking past my window with headphones on. I thought, who wears that as a fashion accessory these days?
I think they're glued to her head.
Yeah, it's a possibility. All right, let's talk about Braidwood 2040. And firstly, give us some of the history and the background of this project.
So this event came about, I was invited to a screening of the 2040 film in the Southern Highlands in, gosh, I think it was August 2019 now. I was really, really inspired. I was able to look back at how I was approaching sustainability, the regeneration, and think instead of trying to go global and save the world, we could actually do it from a small community level. Each person could do their own individual thing. So I was just really inspired by the whole event and decided that it was something that Braidwood could embrace.
Yes.
Like 150 tickets.
I am just blown away. I'm like, they care. All of a sudden, these wonderful women put their hand up and said, guess what? We've got funding. It's on. We're doing it.
I guess there was a lot of collective grief that we were talking about following the bushfires, which is associated with the devastation of the environment.
Yes.
Which Ange really experienced on a personal level.
Nervous.
time I'm trying to hold back tears.
Jake and Anne, for those of you who don't know them, are such loved, beautiful members of this community. They're also musicians and they started this Jam Jar, which is really an amazing event for Braidwood because it brought all of these people out from their homes, even in the middle of winter, to play music and share skills and celebrate each other and connect and impress everybody with these beautiful songs they're just written at home. And to me, that's symbolic of Braidwood. Yeah. There's so many talented, interesting artistic
Absolutely.
People here.
Braidwood is a country town with a
I'm Jara Knowles-Parsons, and I am a photographer and now a director. My film is called Brave Young People.
Welcome to our documentary!
And it's about the brave young people in Braidwood.
What was your experience of the bushfires last summer?
Okay, it was our tester. I hope everyone enjoys it, but it also makes them feel something.
We've got Jara's film, we've got the 2040 film screening, and then we have Damon Gammo, the filmmaker, joining us for 45 minutes for a Q&A.
How big was the fires?
They were very big, the biggest we've ever had, and I think the saddest part is that we lost or displaced about 3 billion of our animals. That's just invertebrates, and some of the scientists estimate it could be in the trillions of some of the insects we lost. So it was a really big, bad fire, and we don't want to ever do that again. Unfortunately, that's why we need to take action really, really, really quickly. There's a chance it might happen again if we're not careful.
Following the fires, Rose and I were thinking, what can we do? What can we do? We want to help. We want to help people to talk about a positive future.
Hello. Hey, what a lovely, polite crowd. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
How can we emerge from this disaster stronger?
Yeah.
How can we bring people together in a way that discusses a positive future?
You know, there's this groundswell here that's just fabulous and all the, you know, children. And
oh, it's fabulous. Great to see so many people.
All kinds of ages here, so. And I'm not too surprised. Braidwood's like that.
We acknowledge that we're meeting on the land of the Durga-speaking people of the Yuin Nation, and we pay our respects to their elders, past and present and emerging. We acknowledge that this land where we live was carefully and sustainably cared for, according to their law, by generations of Yuin clans and families, for tens of thousands of years. We respect the knowledge still held by current generations of the oldest living culture and seek opportunities to listen and learn from them. In doing so, we aspire to a shared future where Aboriginal wisdom is valued and all people and the land are respected and cared for.
What we really loved about Anja's idea of this film is the symbolism of hope.
We don't have many opportunities to come together in the spirit of hope, and when we can, it's such a great thing to do, and I think it's what people need, because for me, I'm like realising how much I need it.
So it's quite nice to see people in a room with a common cause, so I'm happy that you're all here. While you guys are in a clapping mood, I'd just like to introduce Angela Hunter from Dogleg Park.
I swore I wasn't going to cry, but it's not going to happen, is it?
So tonight, I hope that the film gives you the same hope and inspiration that it gave me. I hope that we can talk about what we'd like to see for Braidwood for 2040 and how can we as a community find some common ground to take our community into the future.
It's got to heal our planet and heal our ecosystems, and it's not just emissions, it's getting those landscapes right again.
I'm part of the film. It's about the bushfires and what we want for Braidwood.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
I think that's so great that people can feel like they actually have a voice and have an input into the community instead of it just being top-driven by politicians and councils to be able to say, it's bottom-up. This is what I'd like to see in my community. This is how I'd like to see us going forward, and this is where I'd like to see Braidwood in 2040.
I think I'd love to see a carbon neutral or a negative, a decarbonised local government area.
You know, decarbonising starts with things like putting in EV chargers, microgrids, you know, pumped hydro, all of those solutions which we know work.
Council's got that ability to connect with community, and that's going to be the key driver to achieving change, I think.
I think there's an incredible amount of momentum from the grassroots. We're seeing communities uptake their own battery systems. We've seen recently a group of Canberra, they had 234,000 investors in a community crowdfund energy initiative. So I'm seeing that when a community gets involved in these type of initiatives, it has all this cascading benefits to the social fabric of that community.
My vision for Braidwood is that we continue to tap into the wisdom of all the extraordinary people who've come to make this place their home, because there's a lot of collective wisdom, and to use it as a team to collaborate and make sure that we survive into the future.
Yeah, well, that's what we need. If there's enough energy and will, I don't think it'll be that hard. We know, we've known for a long time a lot of things that we can do differently and better. And just, you know, combining energies and working together can bring about so much change.
I hope that we can walk away with hope. I hope that we can walk away with some positive, realistic goals that we can achieve that can make Braidwood more resilient.
You know, we all have agency, and sometimes we don't know the outcome of our agency. I think there's a great Foucault around that. You plant a seed and you don't know what that tree is going to turn into. It might become a home for birds or shade, or build a house for someone in the future. We just got to keep the momentum, keep having these conversations, keep putting the solutions out there, and who knows what it might lead to in 100 years from now. We might have an ecological civilization or an ecological revolution.
Next, I'm going to get Claire and Jarrah up here to introduce Jarrah's short film.
I really enjoyed making this, and I can't wait for you all to see it, and thank you for coming.
Moment of truth.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our documentary.
Lots of young people want a happy environment, and I think everyone wants that.
It would be great if Braidwood could be self-sustaining.
Schools do need to start teaching about climate change stuff, I guess, because then people can maybe understand the issue.
I want to make more community gardens.
I hope the community is still as strong as it always was.
And we're more prepared for the fires, so it won't take that long for them to go away.
And I hope that we still remember what the town has been through as a community, and I hope that we still remember that and can look back on that and, I suppose, grow from it, and that nothing like that happens too devastating again.
Hi, folks.
Hello, how are you going?
We're back.
My vision is to, when I'm old, to be walking through a forest that I created.
Yeah, I just want to show, this is in the orchard. Thanks to my neighbour Jason, who gave me a handful of seed.
Knowing that in a few years' time, somebody else can benefit from that. I want somebody else to sit in the shade that I've planted for, you know.
Just a nice little apple tree. There's some cider one day.
We're in spring, everything is in blossom.
Maple coming up there, apples there.
So they're going to be a beautiful avenue of blossoms once they grow up.
That was the final episode of an original podcast series, Heart of the Storm, proudly produced by Braidwood FM. Special thanks to Jake and Ange from Dogleg Farm, Damon Gamo and the Braidwood community for so generously sharing their stories.
We actually have, this is an apricot. We've actually got some tiny little apricots. This is a nashi pear, look. And, oh, this beautiful peach.
Beautiful. I'm so happy.
Hazelnuts.
Another little oak coming up there.
This production would not have been possible without the generous support of the Braidwood Community Bank, Queanbeyan and Palarang Regional Council, the Braidwood Community Help Fund, and Braidwood FM. Also, a special thanks to the creative team behind the series who have worked so hard to bring it to life. Claire Young, creator and director, Rose Rickinson, producer, Nick Munnings, sound designer, Michael Simic, series composer, and all the other musicians and composers who have contributed to various episodes. And from me, Gordon Wardis, I would like to personally thank my colleague and lifelong friend, Rod McClure, to whom I owe an indescribable amount of thanks for his support and wisdom, which enabled me and the station to contribute its part to this series. And finally, thank you to our listeners for tuning into Braidwood FM and celebrating our first original podcast series. Please become a member, a sponsor, or donate to keep this essential community service going well into the future.